You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. And before we get into tonight's broadcast, I want to tell you, number one, for all you fools and idiots and liars and rumor mongers, I am alive, and tonight's broadcast is proof. If you know someone who told you that I was dead or arrested or in jail or in the grave or bombed or anything else, I want you to make it a point to tell them that they have no credibility whatsoever. They are rumor mongers, liars, and in my estimation, just overall scum. I am sick and tired of all of this Patriot Facts Network bullshit. The rumor mill bullshit. The crap bullshit. I told all of you well in advance where I was going to be, lost in the desert of Nevada, taking a group of people who paid for my supervision out in order to discover the reality of a top secret test site in the state of Nevada and maybe be able to see some tests of some technology that's way beyond what any of you can perceive. I also understand from tape recordings that have been furnished to me that some of the rumors that I was dead and would not show up for this seminar in the state of Nevada were actually started by a man named Kurt Lochner. Kurt Lochner, a longtime Federal Bureau of Investigation and Anti-Defamation League stoolie, informant, scumbag, suckbutt, whatever you want to call it. And he apparently called several shows. He apparently has no job because he's always calling different radio shows, propounding his socialist, communist ideas and ideals. And many of you picked up on it and called other shows and other people without checking, without any knowledge whatsoever, and perpetuated the bullshit, which makes you just a bunch of sheeple fools. And if you're one of those fools, I hope everybody rubs it right in your face, because it's time you stop that crap. I don't think you will, because I don't think you have the brains to do it. I think you exist on one adrenaline rush to another of all of this bullshit. And that's really the only reason that you call yourself a patriot or a militia member. Well, I'm sick to death of you and of it. And I'm here alive. Alive and well. And that makes those of you who perpetuated the rumor that I was dead, arrested, in jail, in prison, blown up, or any of the other variations of said scene, makes you look like the blithering idiot fools that you really are. And you are. Whether you like it or not, whether you care about it or not, you are fools. Stupid fools. Believe me. When I go out, there will be no doubt about it. None whatsoever. You won't have to fish for proof. It will be there. if not provided by the communist news networks, it will definitely be provided by all of the members of the intelligence service in CAGI and every other true patriot in this country. And the rest of you scum-sucking wannabes better get your heads in gear. Better get your ass in gear. Better get on target. Because you ain't nothing but a bunch of little children playing in the sandbox.
Come on, let's cruise, you got nothing to lose, so come on, let's cruise, you got nothing to lose, so come on, let's cruise, you got nothing to lose, so come on, hey, baby, come on.
Do you really think it's a coincidence that I announced that I'm going to go off in the deserts of Nevada and all of a sudden people on all the radio talk shows across this country, especially the so-called Patriot radio talk show, people who should know better, and you know who they are, they talk to you every day and every night, never substantiate, never document anything, have people call in and they just go with it. You don't do that on this show. You call in and tell me that somebody died. You've got to document it, but not on these other shows. So why are you listening to them? It's just a bunch of noise. And they took you out of the picture, didn't they? And shortly after, I was supposed to have been killed. Somebody named Pam shows up on all the Patriot talk shows and all of the other talk shows on shortwave and satellite and some AM and FM across this country. And she tells you that her contacts in the Central Intelligence Agency and the Pentagon have given her a red list and a blue list. And you all bought it. And you've been running around like you're the chickens that you are, with your heads chopped off, just flopping all over the barnyard, just like this was designed to make you do, while I was out in the desert, excommunicado. They pulled this off on you good. You dummies! The moment that she said she got the information in the list from the Central Intelligence Agency, you should have known that she is a liar. Now, take note of this. I am calling her a barefaced, bald-ass liar right here on the air. And if she's not, she can sue me. You know what's going to happen? She's not going to sue me. Because what I'm telling you is the truth. She conned you because most of you sent her $5 for this list. Did you get the list? Did you get the list? Most of you never got the list. What'd you get when you called? You got an answering machine, an answering service. You didn't get to talk to these people. Did you get to check their credentials? No, not at all. Did you get to check their sources? No, not at all. Nothing like that has ever happened. Did you get the list? Oh, and 160,000 are supposed to be on this list? Come on, folks. There is a master warrant list. It exists underground at Mount Weather in Virginia. People like Bobo Grits and other Trojan horses are adding to this list all the time. But I can guarantee you that this little Trojan horse herself, this little liar, this little deceiver, this little manipulator, Pam and her cohorts have no list, have not ever received any list from the Central Intelligence Agency, or from the Pentagon, for that matter, or from Europe, or from anywhere else. But they've taken you for a lot of $5 bills. They have caused you to scamper all across this country, pulling up stakes, packing your bags, all kinds of crap. Let me tell you this. If you're afraid, number one, you're not even in this battle. Number one, if you are afraid to begin with, no matter what anyone says, you're not even in this battle, because that's how they win the battles. All they have to do is make you afraid enough, and you will put the chains around your own ankles. You see, this battle is going to be won by people who are not afraid, who don't go scampering off like that, who don't succumb to that kind of bullshit. And she was featured on the Mark Kornke Intelligence Report. Mark Kornke is a Trojan horse. I've told you this many, many, many times. I've told you over and over and over again, and you're not listening. And that's okay with me if you don't want to listen. That's fine. Because I would just as soon know who the stupid Chicken Littles are as I would who are the brave people who are willing to stand and fight for liberty in this country. And that's the truth. So, Pam, let me tell you this. I know your last name. I'm not going to say it on the air. I just got back today. I've been driving all day. I'm tired. Very, very tired. But I've heard all about you. I know all about you. I know all about your bullshit lies. Pam, you are a liar. You are a deceiver. You are a manipulator. You didn't get anything from the CIA or the Pentagon or from Europe. There is no red list or blue list. There is a master warrant list. And when they get ready to execute it, no one is going to know when that happens. And all of you who think that you're going to know, well, you're playing some game with some other rules, with some other entities, and you're not even involved in this. So you go off with the little children where you belong, and you play those games, including Mark Kornke and anybody else who was involved in this deception. I first heard from Mark Kornke back in 1989 when he contacted Stan Barrington, who was a good friend of mine and my partner at that time, and told him that he was a member of the United States Air Force Office of Special Investigations, which is Air Force Intelligence, and that he had all kinds of information he wanted to feed to us. Well, he sent us some stuff, which turns out later that he claimed came from Army Intelligence. And I told Stan, I said, you know, we can't believe these people unless they provide proof of who they are. So I told Stan to demand that this man furnish us some kind of documentation of who he was and the documentation of what he was furnishing us. He said, no sweat, I'll send it to you right away. You know, he said that probably 5 million times to just about everybody who's asked him since then, and he has never, since that time, ever furnished any documented proof of who he is, or where he's coming from, or where he got his information since then. On this broadcast, we document everything. Everything. We don't tell you. anything on this broadcast unless it's true, unless we can document it. And we challenge you to prove us wrong. If you can prove us wrong and send us that proof, or make available that proof, to where we know that what you're telling us is the truth, I'll come on the air and tell it to the whole world. That's the way we do it on the Hour of the Time. And now that I've gotten that out of the way, and all of you people who've been running around like a chicken with your head cut off, not verifying anything, acting like stupid fools, idiots, like you always do, I have another thing that's very serious. I have a very good friend. He's more than a good friend. He is loyal and true. He is one of the people who is responsible directly for satellite radio. Without him, there would be satellite radio, but it would be scrambled and it would be only the network type of satellite radio. I'm talking about Gary Bourgeois. Gary Bourgeois, who has played reruns of this broadcast, who has done so much to enable many of you to have your own satellite systems and understand how satellite radio works, and many broadcasting wannabes who enabled to get on satellite radio and then on shortwave radio and then on other radio. And I got to tell you, I'm one of them. I am one of them. Gary Bourgeois. One of the best friends I've ever had in radio. In fact, I would say that he is the best friend that I've ever had in radio. Started out with Becker Satellite Network, and Becker helped me. But Becker really wasn't interested in helping me or getting me on radio. He was interested in some other things. But I liked him. I really did. And then there was the first satellite network I got on that was a socialist hotbed of absolute welfareism based upon the fact that I paid my bill and nobody else did. So everybody else was existing on that network simply because I paid my bill every month and none of them did. And what it really amounted to was they were getting free satellite time because I paid my bill. As soon as I found out about that, I dumped them all. And I'm just strictly talking about satellite. I'm not talking about WWCR or WRNO, who both were instrumental in helping this broadcast make the impact that it has. And we'll talk about those another night. I'm talking about satellite. And then Gary Bourgeois came up with his friend, Mark Emmanuel, formed another satellite network and got us on that. And Gary has never failed, whether he had a monetary interest in it or not. He never cared. He never cared ever. He's always been there to help. He helped me set up my studio because I didn't know one wire from another. I didn't know what to plug in to who. I didn't know how it worked. I didn't know a Comrex from a DBX from a from an equalizer, from a CD player. And that's the truth. Gary Bourgeois taught me the difference between all those things. He spent many hours on the telephone helping me hook them up. And then a lot of time actually uplinked the satellite to make sure that it was all working. And he didn't have to do any of it. He wasn't getting paid for any of it, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to know that this man is probably more responsible than any other person in this world for the fact that there is unscrambled satellite radio that all of us can tune into at any time. Because he's probably had more to do with bringing that about than anybody alive. See, because all the networks and the, everybody wants to have it all scrambled and they want everybody to pay for it and all that kind of stuff. Gary Bourgeois, is the kind of guy that believes that once it's on satellite, it should be available to everybody. And I happen to believe that, too. Because I believe in the American way. And the American way is that you have a product and you sell it. And the product in radio is the show, is the program, the broadcast. And if it's good, you'll have a sponsor who will pay the airtime, whatever that is. So I am firmly aligned with Gary Bourgeois. Recently, not too long ago, about 2 weeks before I left on the Area 51 tour, I called Gary. And Gary was weak. And weak is an understatement. Gary was sick. His voice, it didn't sound like him. When he answered the phone, I said, "Is Gary there?" "This is Gary." I said, "This can't be Gary. This is not Gary. Let me talk to Gary." "No, this is Gary." I talked to him and I found out that he was really, really sick. And he's still really, really sick. Gary is one of the unsung heroes. Many of you who are used to listening to his broadcast on satellite or on shortwave have noticed that they have been reruns or that they have been stand-ins conducting the show for Gary because Gary cannot do it. Gary's sick. He's really sick. He is really sick. When I spoke to him that day, I found out that he had just returned from the hospital and they had stuck a needle in his body in an area and literally sucked out 60 pounds of liquid. Now, I had trouble with that when he told me that because I don't know any doctor that would allow someone to lose 60 pounds like instantly. Or overnight, or in a week, or even in 2 weeks. I mean, that's heavy-duty stuff. And this is what Gary said that they did. And he said, "You know, I felt fine when I went in. And when I came back, I just feel so weak, and I feel so bad, and I'm losing my voice." And his voice sounded terrible. And I mean really terrible. And I knew that Gary was sick. And I told him that we loved him, and we cared about him, and we really were concerned about that. And he said he thought he would be right back on top really quick, you know, without any problems and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Really bravado type stuff. And I said, "Sure, Gary, I want you to get some rest. I'm really concerned about you. I want you to go to sleep. You know, don't do anything." And then it came time for me to go to Area 51. And I know that Gary is always in need of a little cash. And I needed somebody to rerun the broadcasts of the Hour of the Time. Also knew Gary was sick. So I tried calling Mark Emanuel, who owns the satellite network. And I couldn't get in touch with him. He failed to respond to any of my calls or anything. And so I called Gary and I asked him if he felt up to playing the reruns. Gary said, "Well, I really don't know. You know, I think I could play the reruns, but, you know, I tend to fall asleep about that time of night and I just can't seem to wake up." And I told him, I said, "I'm going to try to find some other way to get these reruns played. Even if we have to send them to WWCR and forget about satellite." And he said, "Well, you know, I don't want you to do that." He said, I don't want it to be off the satellite. And he said, "I think I might be able to do it, but I'm not really sure." And so it was, you know, several days away. It's about 5 or 6 days away before we were leaving. I tried to call Mark Emanuel, and I couldn't get a hold of him because I thought maybe if he could play the reruns on the from his end on the satellite network that everything would be okay. I couldn't get a hold of him. And I don't know what the reason was. It doesn't matter. I couldn't get a hold of him. He's a good guy. And I know he wasn't ducking anything. And so Gary had said, if you can't get Mark or anybody else to do it, send me the tapes and we'll talk about it. So the day before, I sent Gary the tapes overnight, and I tried to call him and talk to him about it. I couldn't get a hold of him. I tried to call Mark Emanuel and couldn't get a hold of him. So I called Gary back, and I got his answering machine. I said, Gary, I know you're sick. I know you're very, very sick. And this show is not important enough to risk your health. So I don't want you to do anything that you feel would even keep you awake for one moment if you feel like you're sleepy. In other words, I don't want you to do this show. I don't want you to do the hour at a time if you feel that you're really not up to it. And I asked him to call me back. And the next morning, we were to leave. Well, I didn't get a call from Gary, but I got a call from Mark, who said, Gary's very, very sick. And I said, Mark, I don't even know that. I said, I sent Gary the rerun tapes. I told him if he wasn't feeling to the point where he could do it, that he should call me right away. Because it's still time enough to get him to WWCR to you. He said, well, if you get them to me, you know, I could play them on the satellite and, you know, that would be on WWCR and all that kind of stuff. I said, well, the tapes have already gone. And along with the tapes, I sent a check to Gary. And I'm not going to tell you anything about the check except I want to stay with Gary. And that's where it belongs. But, because we've always done it. Whenever Gary has helped us, we've always paid him. Gary was not feeling good. He didn't want to call me and tell me that he wasn't feeling good. Gary didn't want to tell me that he couldn't do the show. So he sent the tapes to WWCR. He talked to Mark Emanuel. And while I was gone, the show went on. The Hour of the Time was broadcast on shortwave through WWCR. It was not aired on satellite. And I have no regrets because I did not want, and I still do not want, Gary Bourgeois to jeopardize his health, or anyone else for that matter, in order to air the Hour of the Time. Mark Emanuel took care of the coordination and made sure that everything went okay. And I hope that all of you enjoyed the reruns that were broadcast during that period of time, because I got to tell you, some of them were extremely, in my estimation, important. And so, with all of that out of the way, and with a sincere Gary Bourgeois, we love you. We love you very much. And I know that you do not want me to do this, but I'm going to give an address out on the air. And believe me, folks, he does not want me to do this. I have to do this because he is so sick. He is so ill. He needs some moral support. If you could just drop him a little card, just a little card to tell him how much you appreciate all that he's ever done, I think that Gary might start to regain his health very quickly. And here's the address. Gary Bourgeois. And that last name has always given me a lot of trouble. It's B-O-U-R-G-O-I-S. B-O-U-R-G-O-I-S. Gary Bourgeois. Once again, I'm going to spell that last name because I know how difficult it is. B-O-U-R-G-O-I-S. It's one word. 429 Spring Street. 429 Spring Street. Marquette, spelled M-A-R-G-U-E-T-T-E. That's Marquette, spelled M-A-R-G-U-E-T-T-E, Michigan. So it's Gary Bourgeois, spelled B-O-U-R-G-O-I-S, 429 Spring Street, Marquette, spelled M-A-R-G-U-E-T-T-E, Michigan, 49815. And believe me, folks, he says he doesn't want anybody to know about this, but if you just send him a little card, I know that it would bring a big smile to his face, and he'd feel an awful lot better. And so would I. I'm really worried about him. I'm really, really worried about him. Anybody that lose 60 pounds in 1 week is really ill. Gary is really ill. And if you would just take a little bit of time to tell him how much you appreciate everything that he's done on behalf of satellite radio, satellite broadcasting, and the hour of the time, I would be forever indebted to you, because I am forever indebted to Gary. So please, if you can, help us out in that manner. excuse me. The last couple of weeks, I've been up in the Nevada desert with a group of people who are just absolutely wonderful people. And I arrived on the 3rd. My family arrived on the 3rd. Some other people arrived on the 3rd. Most arrived on the 4th, and some trickled in after that. And it was unseasonably humid. You see, the desert of Nevada is usually dry, which means you don't really suffer from the heat. It feels warm, but you perspire and it evaporates and you know, it doesn't feel that hot. But because of this unseasonable weather in the front that went through, it was uncharacteristically humid, which meant that the heat meant something, and everybody was hot and dripping and miserable and all kinds of stuff. So the first day, Thursday, we delayed the presentation, the initial presentation, for about an hour to make sure that everybody had a chance to get there. And we were only missing about two people when we started. And I gave a presentation that lasted until supper time, which was about 7:30. And at 7:30, we all went over to the Little Alien and we ate. And people were getting to know each other by that time. And I had cautioned everyone that, hey, you know, I can't guarantee that you're going to see anything because I don't know. I just do not know. And they don't tell me when they schedule these test flights. So that night, after dinner, we all piled into the trucks and cars and vans and all these things. And I took them out to the mailbox at the 29.5 mile marker. And I did this for a reason. I wanted to know who was going to be okay in the dark, in the middle of the desert, and who was not. Turned out everybody was okay. But that first night, they were a little, little skittish, as anybody would be. Because it's dark out there. And there's nothing. And I showed them where to look. And I had already that day pointed out what flares look like, and stars, and all this kind of stuff. So they knew what they were looking for. And they didn't see anything that night. Nothing. And you'll have to forgive my voice, ladies and gentlemen, but I've been lecturing for whole bunch of days, and whenever I do that, my voice gets a little endangered, let's say. So, when it got to be 4 o'clock in the morning, I told everybody, it's 4 o'clock, it's time to go back. Nothing is going to happen after 4 o'clock because the sun is beginning to rise, and if there has not been testing by that point, there's not going to be. So everybody went back to their trailers and their rooms at the Lady Inn, and those who were camping out went to their tents or their RVs or their campers or whatever, what have you. And we all went to sleep. And we had agreed the day before that breakfast would be 11:30 every day. That's 11:30, like 30 minutes before noon. And the reason for that is because we get in so late in the morning from our sky watch that everybody needs some time to sleep. So at 11:30, everybody sort of trickled in and had breakfast. And then we went over and had the slideshow, and I showed them an awful lot of things that you just don't get to see unless you see my slide presentation. And it turned out that even on top of all of the things that they had seen during that presentation that they could never have seen otherwise, I had forgotten to bring one tray of slides, so I promised all of them that I would send that tray of slides on a videotape with narration to them, and I will, very shortly. That night, ladies and gentlemen, we went out to the 29.5 mile marker, and then I went to everyone, one by one, and determined whether they were mentally stable and able to conduct themselves properly if I took them right up to the boundary of the test site where the signs are that says deadly force authorized. Because if there were one of them who was not stable and he jumped over the line, it could cause a lot of people to get injured or hurt or killed, as a matter of fact. So after determining that all of the people who were with me that night were stable, were willing to follow instructions, and could understand the danger and the gravity of the situation within which I was about to put them, we set out up the mailbox road to the Groom Lake Road, turned right, and went all the way down to the border of the test site. And I told everybody that there would be a four-wheel drive vehicle, either a Bronco or a Blazer, full of the security goons who would be waiting for us at the site. And lo and behold, when we reached the signs, they were there. And I'm just about losing my voice. Take a little drink of water. They were there, just over the line, in their four-wheel drive vehicle, waiting like a spider. And some of the people who were with me, who had determined that they wouldn't take pictures of the signs, as soon as they saw that four-wheel drive security vehicle, immediately threw their cameras in their cars and locked them up and pretended like they never had a camera, although it would have been okay to take pictures of those signs. After that, I took everyone back up the road to a... Boy, I don't know what's going on with my voice. I've been lecturing so much in the last few days that it just doesn't want to do it anymore, but I'm going to do it anyway. took the whole group back up the road to a little mountaintop where I had originally sat and did a lot of the filming for Project Red Light 2, which most of you don't know anything about. But it was a videotape that I made years ago, long before anybody else ever knew about this place. And showed them all, you know, what this was all about. And then we all went back to the 29.5 mile marker, which is the mailbox on the road on Highway 375. And that night, ladies and gentlemen, I have to tell you, on that night, which was a Friday night, Thursday night, nobody saw anything in the sky. Although we had a great time, we stayed out there until 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was one of the most beautiful skies you'll ever see. All of the stars that you can imagine, and many more, were present in the sky. This night, they actually witnessed the test flight of some of the disc-shaped craft above the above Area 51, and they saw these craft do some of the most incredible maneuvers that you can possibly imagine. None of this was videotaped. None of it was audiotaped. On Monday night, I'm going to ask, and if you're listening, I'm going to ask the people who were in attendance at the seminar in Nevada to call in and tell you what they saw. One of the things that was spotted was a craft that flew overhead at high altitude that flashed on and off. It was extremely large. At first I thought that it might be a rotating satellite with one half painted dark and one half reflective or just bare metal. And I thought that may be what caused it to blink, but it was too big. And as it blinked, it did not slowly, as it came around, go out or come on. I mean, it blinked full on and then full off. And then every few seconds, it would shine two cones of brilliant blue light down toward the Earth. Now, I did not spot this myself first. Many of the people who I took out there who were watching the sky spotted it. They called my attention to it. We called the attention of the others who were not looking in that specific area. And all of the people who were in our group saw this particular phenomenon. Later, we watched as the great orange orb came up over the test site and performed maneuvers that absolutely defy the law of physics, would kill human beings if they were inside the craft while it was performing these maneuvers, if the laws of physics as we know them apply. I strongly suspect that they do not apply, and under the particular science that govern these particular craft, I think there's a totally different aspect of physics, and specifically Newton's law of gravity that we're not consciously aware of, but that scientists and people within the government who are in charge of these projects understand very well. So anyway, that was one. And then later on, we watched way back beyond the mailbox, behind the mailbox, in the opposite direction of Area 51. We watched another orange, larger than any star, anything that you can imagine, in the sky. Come up above the mountains and perform some unbelievable feats of getting from point A to point B and back to point B, and then rising up in the sky and then going back down below the horizon and then coming up and doing some incredible things. And the entire group witnessed that also. That was the night that was, Friday night. And there were some other things that happened. We saw probably one of the largest meteorites. I could tell you without any hesitation, it's the largest meteorite that I've ever seen in my life. Entered the atmosphere on Thursday night, the night that we saw no activity over the test site, and came in blazing, blazing red. Just glowing across the sky, and then broke up into several pieces, turned brilliant green, and then all of the pieces turned red, and then yellow, and then fell down toward the earth. It was an unbelievable huge, gigantic display of a meteor entering the Earth's atmosphere. And Saturday night, we all went out, and there were some other people out there who understood that my group was there, and they wanted to join the group, and we did not want them to join the group, simply because I did not want to be responsible for someone who had not attended the lectures and did not know what it was that we were doing. And so we had to practice a little subterfuge in order to get out near the test site and view the skies. We saw nothing that night whatsoever, except beautiful skies, some falling stars, beautiful, brilliant display of the heavens, but that's it. And on Sunday morning, we all got together and had our last breakfast together, and everybody headed out. Oh, I forgot to tell you. Saturday night, excuse me, I took everybody up to Tin Paiute, which is a little ghost town up on Coyote Summit, and took everybody up to the old silver mine, let them get a sample of silver ore, and explore the old ghost town, and then we went out and they, you know, did the sky watch. Sunday morning we had the breakfast, and that was our last breakfast together. And I have to tell you that when we all came together on the first day, I told them that they were wonderful people who were there, because they really cared they wouldn't be there, and that they would make friendships that would last forever. And I watched that coming to pass on Sunday as they said goodbye to each other and exchanged addresses and telephone numbers and all of those kinds of things. And then we parted company and, of course, went on our way. But for everybody, it was a memorable experience. And I mean memorable experience. And that Friday night was a treat to the eye that none of them will ever forget. And they all know, all of them who were there and who watched Friday night, that there really is a secret technology way beyond the capability of the average American, or any other nationality for that matter, to understand. Way beyond what we can comprehend as the law of physics is in play there. So, with that out of the way, I will... well, I will take your calls, and please be merciful because my voice is failing quickly. I am so thankful that I have the weekend to recover from all of this, and Monday night... we'll be back. The number is 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. Good evening. You're on the air. Hello? Well, let me check this. Hello?
Yes, Bill?
Yes?
This is Jeffrey from New Orleans.
All right, Jeffrey. How are you?
Hi. I'm glad to hear you back. I understand you're having a real rough time with your voice, but I understand why. I was at the Libertarian Party National Convention in Washington, D.C. I'm sending you material through your Harvest address at Eager, Arizona.
Uh-huh.
I will tell you this on the air. I met one of your old characters, Karen Scarborough. She told me her side of the story and was supposed to send me some faxes, but then she said she wouldn't do it because she claims she's going to try to sue you in court.
Well, that's what she said when the whole thing was happening. She was going to sue me and have me prosecuted and destroy me. And what happened is she and Sharon Ford both submitted their resignations in writing with their signatures because they both knew they were wrong. She's not going to sue me anywhere.
Well, I'm just telling you what she told me. Anyway, I'm sending you this information that's much more detailed than I have time to tell you tonight, and I'm going to let you look it over. Because there were some things that went on there you should know about. I'm also sending you a speech of the Libertarian candidate, Harry Brown, and let you review it and see what we can do.
Great. Thank you.
And I am writing Gary Bourgeois right now, so...
Wonderful.
Thank you very much, and keep it going, yet. Well, keep it going.
Well, thank you. I will try.
Thank you.
Good night. Now, Karen Scarborough is not going to sue me or anybody else. She's a bag of wind. She's a bullshit artist. She's a liar. And she was instrumental, along with Sharon Ford and Charlie Duke of Colorado, in attempting to destroy the Constitution Party. They did a pretty good job of it. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bill. You're a real trooper tonight to battle through this thing with your voice. I didn't think you were going to make it this far.
Well, I'm trying.
I'll do most of the talking real quick to make it easy on you. I wanted to give you, if I could, what I call my Mason alert. I noticed two mentions of Freemasonry in major media in the past week, both on national TV, and I also got one from my local newspaper. One was a clip. I haven't seen the whole movie yet, but the new John Sayles movie that's out, Lone Star. I saw a preview for the movie, and Chris Christopherson was asking questions. He's one of the characters in the movie. Asking questions about the murder victim, and he asked if the victim was a Mason. He was an ex-sheriff who had been murdered, evidently, or something. And the one questioner said the other, well, the only thing that was found on him when they dug his body out of the lake was his badge and his Mason ring. That's from the new movie Lone Star with John Sayles.
Mm-hmm.
Also, on the television show American Gothic, two episodes on Wednesday night ran back-to-back. Now, one of those episodes, the Mason imagery was very strong. They did quite a bit of talking on there about Freemasonry. I'd never seen that much on a network television show before. And I really can't go all into it and explain all the ins and outs of it, but if you'll ask Grant, I'm sure some of your listeners will probably have seen that and maybe you've got a tape on it. They ran two episodes that night, and the second one was really, really strong on the Masonry image, and they talked a lot about the dollar bill and the pyramid on the dollar bill, and
yeah.
A very interesting show, and I've never seen it all the way through. I happened to be flipping dials and caught into these two and watched them both. And also had something from my paper I clipped out today. I'll read quickly and try not to do an advertisement for them, but it says the International Free and Accepted Modern Masons Incorporated, an order of Eastern Stars, will hold a 46th Supreme Convention at the blah blah hotel and all. I'm going to go commercial for them.
Eastern Star is the women's organization, and it's a co thing, you know.
It goes on to say in the final paragraph, the organization led by Jordan Matthew is co-owner of the first black-owned broadcast facility of radio and television stations, along with Barber College in Detroit.
Yeah, isn't it amazing, though, that they never would let blacks in the lodge?
Exactly. And to my amazement, Bill, it says here, the fraternal organization is a Christian group with more than 350,000 members nationwide.
Yeah, and that's a barefaced liar. They have nothing to do with Christianity. In fact, their whole goal is to destroy Christianity. If you really want to get a kick out of some symbolism and understand where this UFO thing is going, get Whitley Strieber's new book. I don't remember the title. I just got through reading it. I'm very sorry I don't remember the title. But it's Whitley Strieber's new book. Read that, and it'll blow your mind. It has all kinds of it'll tell you with no hesitation whatsoever. Whitley Strieber is a Freemason. He's an adept, a priest of the Illuminati, and the whole alien abduction thing is a total bullshit mind control manipulation.
Well, just this week, Bill, my brother and I were working third shift work, and we were talking face-to-face with the gentleman we were working. He was a Mason. He was showing us ring and talking a lot, and we were asking him questions and, trying to play dumb and just, we like to ask things and fill them out, but not act suspicious.
Yeah.
And he just told us flat out to our face, no, we're not a religious organization. We're not this. We're not that. It really doesn't have anything to do with the religion. But then I pick up the paper and I see here that they're bragging that they're a Christian group with 350,000 members nationwide.
Yeah, they really are a religion. Anyway, I got to let you go and get somebody else in here before we go.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. 520-333-4578 is the number. Good evening. You're on the air.
Glad to get through. I hope you don't think this is a naive question, but was there any possibility that what you saw in the desert there could have been some sort of like a holographic projection or something like that?
That's absolutely possible. I've always said that. We have no idea what we're looking at except that it absolutely defies the laws of physics It defies any concept of a manned aircraft unless the laws of physics don't apply to the man within the aircraft, because he would surely die with some of these maneuvers at the speeds that we witness.
Right.
Yes, absolutely it's possible. I've said it many times that holographic images or projections are a definite possibility in this manipulation that they're trying to project to us.
Okay. Sounds plausible. I read your book, Behind the Pale Horse,
uh-huh.
And I've been listening to your show for a long, long time. In fact, back in the old days when you had Stan Barrington on your staff or whatever.
Yeah, Stan, I got to tell you something. Without Stan,
letter from him thanking me for sending a donation to your show.
Yeah, without Stan, I don't think that anything that ever followed would have ever happened. Stan was there when we really needed somebody, and I don't think if he had been there that we would ever have gotten anywhere. So we owe Stan a lot, and we certainly wish him well. Stan and Elma are elderly, and they decided to retire, and we seldom have any contact with them. But
well, if he's out there listening, I'd like to wish him well, and I'd like to thank you and ask you to keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. Yeah, and if he's out there, I would like to wish him well and thank him for everything, because without Stan, none of it would have been possible. I can assure you of that, folks. 520-333-4578. Good evening. You're on the air, and you're the last caller.
Good evening, Bill. Open phones?
Well, yeah.
Okay, great. I was wondering if you know of any product Linda Thompson might distribute regarding the dead that surround Clinton. I remember you mentioned you may have her on to do a list kind of thing and investigate some of the deaths. Has that happened?
Linda has probably the most extensive and most documented list of people around Clinton who have turned up dead since he was, way back before he even became governor. Than anyone. She was at one time making that available to people. I don't know what she's doing now because since everyone turned against her, she lost her offices. She lost all of her phones. She lost everything, to tell you the truth.
A way we can still get in touch with her?
There probably is. I can't give it to you tonight because I don't have it in front of me, and I need to call her and find out. I have her home phone number, and I can't give that on the air.
Okay.
But I will try to find out a way, because you all know what I think of her. She's the American Joan of Arc. Without her, the attention of America would never have been focused on Waco, and none of what has emerged would ever have come to light. And I am extremely disappointed and very upset with the American people that they have turned against her and deserted her as they have. It is extremely disappointing to me.
Also, do you have any plans, and could you please distribute your UFO 101 tape, the one that you're going to distribute with narrative? Do you have any plans for that?
No, I certainly don't. But I have to let you go because we're out of time.
Okay, Bill.
Good night.
Good night.
And good night, folks, and God bless you all.
Come and go. I give anything just to keep.